Well, Dr. K or Dr. K Duriraj, thank you so much for joining the Business of Aesthetics podcast. You're a facial plastic surgeon that I've been following for a long time. You're based out of Pasadena, California. For those who don't know Dr. K, she is a facial plastic surgeon. She has her own practice, also does quite a bit of non-surgical treatments. Has her own skincare line, and then even has her own podcast, Beauty Bites, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. Dr. K, would you mind taking a few minutes to kind of describe your career over the last, from fellowship to today? Give us kind of the rundown of how you've progressed throughout the years.
Of course. And thank you for having me on the podcast. I am always fascinated to talk about the business of aesthetics. Yes, I'm a facial plastic surgeon. I'm from Los Angeles, California, and I trained here at UCLA. I trained in otolaryngology, head and neck surgery at UCLA, which is number one in the country for head and neck surgery training. And it was difficult residency. I loved doing cancer, long reconstructive trauma cases, and those kind of things. And then towards the end of my training, evolved more into aesthetics. So I've been doing aesthetics for 20 something years now, since the beginning of Botox and the beginning of some of the first gel fillers that were available on the market, and back in the days of collagen injections, even. And it's just been a very lovely evolution of learning how to bring injectables into a surgical practice and now evolving to do more and more things non-surgically, because that's what patients want, is they want no downtime, immediate results, and feeling good without major interventions, I think. So yeah, I have an artistic eye. I really believe in the science of surgical placement of the fillers and things that we do. I think using my surgery knowledge has been so helpful. I teach an online course too for injectors. It's called Modern Aesthetic Theory and Artistry. And that has over 30 different modules that you can learn from anywhere in the world. Everything from beginner Botox to very complex, like liquid rhinoplasty or threads, or using collagen biostimulators. So that's me. And this year I've been doing lots of clinical research, investigator-initiated trials in the office, and that's been interesting and really good to push the envelope on science. And I do have a skincare line. Love the podcast. I have four kids, two dogs, and one husband who's an interventional cardiologist. So it's a busy, busy life.
That is incredible. And looking at your involvement with different companies and clinical research, what's your approach when something new comes to the market? How do you tend to do your research about it? How do you decide what to offer and what not to offer? Because I think our field is so ripe with great innovation and technology, but I also think you have to be a good consumer for your patients. And only offer them things that are evidence-based with minimal risk and have a high likelihood of providing a benefit.
That's such a great question. The market is currently flooded with a lot of new products, which are truly not vetted and not scientifically proven. So my first approach is to be intellectually curious. It's coming up to the booth and asking to look at white papers, publications that have peer review critiques and data and substance and science. And so that's my step one always, is to read the research. And step two is looking at, clinically before and after pictures, understanding the mechanism of action of products, and then trialing it if I think it's very safe. And many things are not, like salmon sperm is trending, polynucleotides are trending. And when you really do a deep dive into literature, so my typical route is to pull the top 30 articles in PubMed and do a deep dive into my own read of the literature. And in doing that, you realize that the literature is weak. There are very few patients in the studies. Studies are all written by sponsors and people who promote the companies, and there isn't a lot of science behind it. So, I fully agree with you. First, do no harm. And second, weed out all the marketing messaging and the advertising. And third, to be your patient's best advocate. And that's protected me over the years, because I only have one reputation. I only have one chance for a patient to lose faith in my recommendation. So if I recommend something and it's expensive, it doesn't really do much, they're not going to trust me the next time. So I'm super careful.
Yeah, for sure. Talk a little bit about your skincare line. For anybody who's interested, you retail those on your website, and it looks like you have a huge variety of project or products for different skin types and concerns. What has been your own kind of development of your skincare line, and what advice would you give to younger surgeons who are interested in starting their own skincare line?
For me, I'm a skincare fanatic and I feel like half dermatologist. I read a lot about skincare, so I'm an ingredient nut. And when I first began my practice 20 years ago, I started with an acne kit because everyone's a little nervous. Like, can I actually sell skincare? But that was something where there was a medical concern and a necessity and ability to correct a physical problem for a patient. And that success with that led me to bring on a sunscreen. And then following that, we have about 20 different SKUs treating all the major skin conditions, like, for adult, aging skin concerns, wrinkles, dryness, for acne prone skin, for inflammatory skin. And now I'm starting a regenerative skin line, which is more biostimulatory and peptide based. And then I've also branched into supplements. So we had a hair, skin, and nails vitamin, and then Internal Radiance is the name of the line, and we do a lovely collagen peptide powder and a beauty greens. And so I just have developed products that I have wanted and needed for myself and for my patients. When we have it in the office, it's so easy to almost prescribe it because these are prescription strength products, physician grade. It's very easy for someone starting their practice these days to work with a company. And a lot of people go private label route, which is easy and a great start. And to make sure you like doing skincare and you want to talk about it all the time, that's a good route to go. So you can start with that. I have three different cosmetic compounding formularies that we work with to innovate and, bring really customized care to the products. So it's definitely a passion project. I think TikTok and social media have blown up skincare in the last 3 years since the pandemic, and I encourage all my patients to be on a gray regimen.
Yeah, for sure. It seems like a daunting process. And I know that one, you have to be passionate about something and really love to do it. Two, it has to make financial sense. Do you feel like spending the time and money on your own skincare has been profitable for your practice?
It's definitely, it is profitable. It's profitable. However, if you don't talk about it, no one knows and they stop listening and they go buy somewhere else. It's whatever voice is in their ear. So you have to be passionate enough to want to talk about it every day. And it is expensive to hold inventory. And some companies require you to, when I'm doing custom lines, I have to buy 5,000 pieces of inventory. So then you have to have storage and you have to have someone to manage, someone to ship. It's a whole understanding of, like, you don't just jump on a trend. If you want to just sell skincare, it's simple enough to buy products that are already out there made by other reputable companies and brands. And I think that's also a great start, working with some of the companies that have been around a long time, and bringing in small orders to your office till you prove to yourself that you can do it and you can do it sustainably. Because if you're going to jump on the bigger bandwagon of ordering these big bulk orders, then it's a whole nother infrastructure to build, which I think is well worth it to do. But honestly, you have to talk about it every day to your clients and your consumers.
Talk a little bit about what it's like being in a, what some would say, a pretty saturated area, California. What made you start your practice in the area that you're in, and how has that helped or presented challenges to your business?
I have never really worried about it. I've always grown up in the heart of competition. Like at UCLA, I'm in the middle of Beverly Hills, Westwood, and like the West Side, which is where there are so many plastic surgeons. And I literally trained many of them. And I'm a professor through UCLA, a clinical professor, and I teach the residents, and they go on to practice in that area. And also, I've worked with some of the bigger people there that have mentored me. So I've never really worried about it. I just realized that if you put yourself out there in an authentic way, you resonate with some people. There are 5 billion people on the planet. Like, they're not all my tribe, but my tribe found me because I am me, and they like that aspect. And so it's learning to love yourself and not have imposter syndrome, not doubt yourself, and give yourself visibility. That's what helps to grow who you are.
That is such a good message. And I think that it goes back to there's enough sunshine for every human on the planet. We're not fighting
Yes.
over.
There is plenty of sunshine, right?
You mentioned imposter syndrome and having kind of the confidence in yourself. How has that changed for you over the years?
Does it ever really go away? I don't know. I mean, I deal with that every time I get up on a stage or go lecture at a meeting. I give myself a pep talk. I think I have become ex much more confident. I used to hate public speaking and hate the sound of my own voice. And like paradoxically, now I do a podcast and I lecture all the time. But it's deciding in your own head that you have a message to give that's valuable and wanting to teach and share that message with people. That's helped me to overcome imposter syndrome. In front of patients, I want to teach them and I want to encourage them. I want to show them how I am successfully handling the aging process. And I want them to allow aging to happen, to have acceptance of aging, because that's important. And just to be able to tweak and smoothen the journey makes patients happy. But I think when you get a I made up my mind early on that I think that this industry is driven by women. And 90% of injectors are women, 90% of patients are women. And yet it's only 10% of us in the boardroom or at these big meetings or sitting on panels or giving lectures. And so that bothered me to the point that I need to be the voice. And like I always say that if you got to complain about something, then you've got to find your seat at the table and you got to show up to the meetings and you got to stand up for what you believe in. So when I drive, when I drive myself with that passion and that knowledge, that takes away the imposter syndrome because I have something to say and I want to share it.
Yeah, so much wisdom being dropped right now. I love it. And I would say thank you for serving as a great female mentor for all the other female facial plastic surgeons. You mentioned that you have four children and are
Yes.
married. How do you manage the quote unquote balance of home life, business life, surgeon life?
It's super hard. I don't know that anyone can manage it. Like you give the illusion that you're balancing, juggling all the balls. But the reality is every week you drop a ball and it depends like how bad the week is, how many balls you drop. And like I've done everything crazy from like forgetting to pick up a child to like completely forgetting to turn in, permission slips for trips and just barely getting birthday presents in the nick of time. It's super hard, I think, as a woman. You have a second job. You leave the office and you change uniforms and you put on your mom uniform. Then you go clean up the house and you go run the household. You need a home, need someone to run it. And I decided early on, if my husband's an interventional cardiologist and he's like saving lives and dealing with heart attacks, and like we both can't be gone. So I really made a point of respecting the seasons of my life. Like in the beginning, when the kids were young, this season of your life is all about children. And if they are raised by people other than me, is that what I want? Like, I can't do it all. I do need a, music tutor and a math tutor and whatever. So I need to clone myself, but I also want to be there for the values and the character building and the raising them the way I want them to grow. And so I decided to. In the beginning and the first 10 years of kids, I didn't go to any meetings. I always felt guilty about like disappearing for, CME stuff. And I'm glad. I'm so glad I did it that way, because then the kids grow up and they don't even want to spend time with you. They've got friends, they've got parties, they've got internships. And I did a podcast with a really great author who wrote a book that you only have 18 summers with your kid. And like those are golden protected summers when there's not a job, there's not a boyfriend, there's not a lot of excuses. You can plan these family memories that will resonate forever. It's been something that stuck with me, and I'm so glad that I honored that idea. And the kids have, loved having me around. I worked hard during the time that we were raising them, and I also think it's important for us as mothers to show kids hard work, show them what your goals are and how you achieve them, and to show that role modeling of hard work, because they need to mimic that in their own lives to understand the investment that we put into who we become.
Yeah, they have two very hardworking parents. How old are your children now?
They're college age, so a couple are in college, a couple have just finished, and it's very rewarding to see them becoming these adult humans with great jobs and great passion for their work. And I see their work ethic, and they're living in New York City, living their best lives. So it's so awesome. But in some ways, as a mother, you're like, is that it? I raised these good humans and now they're gone. So I'm entering that phase of life and traveling more and lecturing more. And now the focus is back on me, which is it's kind of interesting to rediscover who you are after having given it all to the kids, because they do take it all. I get to get a little bit of that back, you know.
What are some things that you do now to fill your own cup?
It's primarily like family activities and, you know, traveling with my husband, exercise. I'm really have neglected myself over the years, so I am working on muscle building, resistance training, stamina, and I want to build future me, who when I'm 80, 85 is aging like not fragile, not frail, still with muscles and core strength and standing upright. Not, you know, you imagine and you see your patients. The beauty of being in this profession is seeing people age, and you see some patients age well and some patients really deteriorate after a certain point. So I'm kind of, we're all every day at this juncture, like, which path do you want to take? Who do you want to create? The strong you or the more frail, decrepit, and breaking down you?
Yeah. You're so right. There seems to be a divergent point for a lot of patients. They either thrive in their older years or they flounder. What are
Yeah.
some goals you have for your practice in the next 2 to 3 years?
It's an interesting evolution in aesthetics right now, because I think we had a really big growth of aesthetics during the pandemic. We've had a little bit more reserve now that patients have some concerns about filler phase, and we've had a certain resurgence in surgery. So I think that things will settle down and go back to kind of normal ebb and flow. I think aesthetics is growing and growing and growing. I love the idea of bringing on new modalities in our office. So I I'm doing a lot with collagen biostimulators. We're doing IV peptides and IV hydration and longevity treatments. And that's probably as I focus on things that I want to learn about, I'm bringing them to the practice. So as I focus on hormones, we're bringing hormone replacement. We do weight loss shots and the semaglutide shots, and having great nutrition and muscle support during that process for patients is wonderful. Bringing a lot of AI, artificial intelligence, into the office with facial scanning software and facial recognition software, which is now being used for volumetric calculations of aging as well as skin quality changes. And I've evolved my practice too to help, you know, dive into some of the intellectual interesting things that I've seen over the years. We're doing a lot of clinical trials. So that's super fun to bring research in, as opposed to just treating patients every day and doing, you know, Botox and fillers. Those are the bread and butter of what we'll always do. And but I think bringing in these new frontiers of AI, regenerative aesthetics, and longevity is where we're headed.
Yeah, very exciting stuff. Well, Dr. K is in Pasadena, California. She is very well trained facial plastic surgeon. If you guys are interested in listening to her podcast, Beauty Bites podcast, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. Also, we mentioned her skincare line. Is there anything else you want to leave the audience with today?
No, I think check us out on Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DRKAY. And we're also on TikTok and LinkedIn. And you can, if you're an injector, follow us at Modern Aesthetic Theory. There's a free Instagram tribe group where you can ask all your questions. And it's very, I really have given away so much free knowledge over the years on our page and on all of my channels. I'm all about educating and I don't hold back. I want people to learn. You know, it's a very curated and bespoke program. You can go to a big meeting and spend $2,000 or $3,000 going to the meeting, but when you leave the meeting, do you actually change or do anything differently in your practice? It's very hard to bring that back to your actual practice. So I want people to check out our Modern Aesthetic Theory course and see in reality how this curated information can stick with you and be just such a resource and a bank for you to rely on. Yeah, I encourage anybody who's interested to reach out, come and observe at the office, and check out all our channels.
Well, thanks, Dr. K. Yes, we have a newer nurse practitioner here at my office, and I'm probably going to buy the Modern Aesthetic Theory course for her tonight. Yeah.
Oh, great. It's wonderful. I think I've had a couple of newly graduated derms come up to me at meetings, and they said, "You know what? I got your course. When I didn't know anything, I finished residency. I thought I knew everything." Then you realize that there's just no one behind you to support you, and you don't actually know. And so, seeing an experienced person take you through like the pitfalls, the pearls, and this is how you do it, and you know, it just sticks with you. So, I hope you know, people like yourself teaching about the business of aesthetics to people that are new and just starting is so rewarding because no one taught us, right?
I had some good mentors along the way. But yeah, a lot of it is trial and error.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you, Dr. K.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on, and I look forward to meeting you in person one day.